All right, let's begin with prayer. Father, we do look to you again this afternoon as we once again look at some practical aspects of ministry. And we do ask, Lord, that you would be here, minister your word, your truth to our hearts, that we can learn together and be edified, Lord. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Maybe I'll start with a couple profiles that we have done, or families that we know. Like I said, we give that assignment to our youth, and I'll just read one that one did, and then I'll give one or two others. Joelle is an energetic, fun-loving 9-year-old who lives in an apartment with her mother in Leicester City. Her mother's name is Julie. Joelle is the youngest in her family and really doesn't know too much about her family, except that her father lives in Georgia. She has at least 2 sisters that she knows of, one whom lives at home. She's not sure if she has more siblings or how many there might be. And there's a side note here by the one who wrote this, and I don't know how many fathers are represented in this home. Joelle has a hunger for God and will at times ask big questions about God. My burden for this family is that they might all become one in Christ. For Joelle specifically, that she would become a woman of God and break the chain of broken homes. Those are things that you find. When we first started orientation, Brother Jeff did a profile on a family, and at that point, there was mom, and she had 3 girls, one girl we didn't know. She was either in a mental institute or jail or something. I'm not sure what her status was. This one had 2 children, and both girls. And I believe that was the situation. These are from 2 different dads, is that right? And neither dad, which was a part of their lives. That was the situation 4 years ago, whenever he first gave it. That has changed quite a bit. She has another child, a boy, and this one has 2 children. Both boys, and she moved in with another boyfriend. He promised her a good life, and things were going to be different. They were serious about their relationship, and they moved out to Central PA. It was a good way to get away from all her troubles, and this guy was the best thing that ever happened to her, and she was going to finally make it in life. And they moved out. It's probably been a year ago. And in the meantime, one of these girls the oldest one is with her grandmother. And the next one actually stayed with a family from church quite a bit. And then this one was born a year ago, somewhere around there. So, this was great, and just 2 months ago or so, we find out that she is now in a mental institute. She had to go to the hospital and was wanting to commit suicide because she found out that her boyfriend is cheating on her, and his new girlfriend actually came to the house, and it was a crashing in of her world. That she thought finally she has found the man, and her world came to a crashing end. And so now this boy, this girl are both with a family from church. The oldest one is still with her grandmother and actually being homeschooled by one of the families at church. And then she has 2 children, and she has given her life to the Lord recently, and is doing a good job of raising her boys. She has a vision, has a long way to go,
but has a vision for her children. And it's just the situations change on a constant basis. That's one home and is repeated many, many times. I said last night that many of these youth, they have dreams and visions for their life. We had another one who we knew their family quite well, and she was a one that was one, her name was Leanna, and she did well in class. She had some high goals for herself. She wasn't going to go the way of everyone else and have a baby and everything else. She wanted to make something out of her life. But one day she informed us that she's pregnant, but she said she was raped. And that was the story for a few months until we found out that that's actually not true. And so she and had another child as well with a different father. And the first child's father, that was just a quick little fling. And now they... she was one that had been very serious, and so it was a real disappointment to us to see her going that way. But then several years later, she had actually moved out of state. Several years later, we had contact with her again, and she was starting to read her Bible again, was very serious about seeking the Lord, and chart a different course in life. Did they get married yet? They now have gotten married, and they have a good family. So it's a blessing to see those, that where God is breaking that chain in the lives. We have another bright spot where the mom has 9 children. How many does Alanda have? I think it's 9 children. And they were all with the same father except for the last one. And in probably in the last 6 or 7 years, she has come to the Lord and is a real bright spot. Her children, several of her children, her youth have come to the Lord as well. And she is a real bright spot in there. Just loves the Lord and is trying her best to teach her children to follow the Lord. And even though one of her daughters has a few children, isn't married, yet in a lot of ways they are a family that is going somewhere, and it's such a blessing to see those families. We had another home that seemed like a good home where Dad was actually in their lives, but then he got divorced and another woman entered their lives, and she had a son and a daughter. And it just seemed like their lives just kind of started going all kinds of directions and topsy-turvy and trying to find their way. And so you have those situations, you know, where it was like, oh, you know, here's a home that has some stability to it. And then it's also torn apart and Dad went a different way. So those are profiles. And we enjoy those. I think those are some of the highlights of our courses when we take them, is to have the young people come back with those assignments and be able to share them with the rest of us. The session this afternoon is on safety and other practical issues. And it's a more of a practical topic, one that is... very necessary, especially in today's world. Proverbs 21:31 says, "The horse is prepared against the day of battle, but safety is of the Lord." So we're going to look at a lot of practical aspects of things, but I think we need to keep this in mind, that we can do all that we can do to prepare against the day of battle. We can do everything right and still... it comes back to safety is of the Lord. And I think there's some practical things that we do need to do, but we need to recognize and have that dependence upon the Lord for our safety and for all the possibilities that are out there. Those things we turn over to the Lord and trust Him for the result. In the 16 years that we have been in the city, we have not had any major incidents. We have a lot of vehicles on the road on a Tuesday night, and we thank the Lord that we haven't had any accidents involving children. Where we had a van with an accident. We've had accidents with the vans, but not with children in them. And so that has been a real blessing. We have been tremendously blessed in that way. And we've been blessed with relationships where, you know, say an arm gets broken at an activity where that isn't made a huge deal of. So safety on the streets, it's broken up into several different sections: on the streets, in the vans, on our grounds, in the classroom, special activities, and then also other practical issues. Some practical points of safety on the streets. When you're working with younger children, which is how we started, our focus was on younger children when we first started, and as we went along, the children got older. And today we work with a lot of youth, not so much by choice, but because the ones we were working with grew up. And that has led us down a road that gives us new challenges every step of the way as we continue to grow. And our young people, some of them are now parents, like we've seen in some of the profiles, and we keep going. So we're working with younger children, and one of the things that's often a good practice in crossing the streets is with younger children is to hold their hands as you walk across the street. Don't allow them just to go running across the street, just like Jared gave the example of the Boys and Girls Club, the lady that reprimanded the children for just flying across the street. But make sure you're with them, and that you, if you can, you hold their hand, or at least that you go together as a group across the street. One of the challenges that you face as you pick up, you're out, and you picked up two or three, and now you're going to the next one. Oh, can I go with you? You know, I want to go in and pick this one up. And that one is one that we have been flexible with, but generally, it's safer just to keep everybody in the vehicle and allow the teacher only to go. If it's a new place and it's someone that, well, this is my friend, I had, you know, brought them and I know where I'm going, we might take them along just simply to make sure that we know where we're going. But generally, we try to make it a practice of keeping the children in the vehicle once they're there, until you get to the place where you're going. Something that we have faced quite a bit of, and I don't know how you find it, but is other children that aren't coming to the ministry. They climb in the van, they climb on the van, they hang on, whatever, and make trouble. And those aren't always the easiest to deal with, especially when it's somebody that wants to come but is laid off for a week because of discipline issues. Well, there's a possibility they might make trouble. If you're right in front of the home, it's not difficult because you can talk to mom or dad and they can deal with it. But in a lot of times, you know, you pick up children that are at their friends, and that's just where they go to get picked up. Rather than having to go around to every house, they get picked up at a different place. Or like we used to have quite a bit that we got from one housing complex, and you're in the parking lot and you have, you know, you're in order to go back to the parents, you'd have to go around. And so it just makes, and plus if it's not someone you deal with, if it's not somebody that's in your class, you might not even know who their parents are. So it can be difficult, and in those situations, I think it is appropriate to, if you just simply are not able to deal with it, to use the police as an option. Often when you mention that it's time to call them, that takes care of it in itself. But I don't believe it's wrong to call them in situations like that where this isn't somebody I work with and they're just simply making trouble, and I don't know what to do. I'm not going to just drive off with them hanging in the van, and they might be thrown objects, whatever it may be, to deal with it the best you can. The other thing before you do that would be to see if any of the children know their parents, and try to send somebody to talk to them. Again, working together with the parents as much as possible is the best option. On drop-off then, when you're taking them back, a good policy again for you, and that we have made a policy, is especially the younger children, that you don't just simply drop them off and leave. You stop, you go across the street with them, you make sure that mom's going to answer the door, that mom's actually at home, and they get in the door, and then you leave. If it's an older youth, 16, 17, who's used to being out, hanging out on the street by themselves anyway, then it's not as big a deal. Or they have their own key, or whatever the case may be. But you want to make sure that that you're dropping your children off at home, and that they're in the door before you leave. We've had the situation where you get there and nobody's at home. What do you do? Or the other one is where the child says, "Oh, mom said I can be dropped off at a friend's house." Well, that always adds to the time to drop off, because then it's like, okay, can I talk to your mom? You know, what's her number? And you call her and figure out, is this actually okay for them to be dropped off at a friend's house, and actually make that contact there, and then make sure everything's cleared before you do that. If no one is at home, we have already, and we can't get a hold of anyone, we can't find them. There have been times where a neighbor said, "Hey, you know, they stay with us sometimes. Go ahead and leave them here. We'll make sure they get home." Or most of the time when that happens, we'll just take them back with us and keep them until we can figure out where the parents are. In the vans, there's a lot of safety considerations there. And with our last vehicle insurance policy, we actually had to come up with some driver safety guidelines. And I think that was good for us to have to do that, because it helped us to be able to put on paper what we already tried to put in practice. And I'll just go over some of that. All drivers must be approved by the administration and go through driver orientation and training. Approved drivers must be 21 years of age or older. Where possible, it should be someone at least 24 years old. And insurance is usually more expensive for ones that are under 24 or 25 anyway. Seat belts must be worn by the driver and all passengers when the vehicle is in motion. And Jonathan told me a story, I guess it was one of you, that a incident where the children got in the car and refused to buckle their seat belts, and so they sat there. Are you here that did that? No? Okay. So they sat there and said, "Well, we're not going anywhere until the seat belts are buckled." And they just refused, and so they sat there. And the police was sitting up the street and saw the vehicle just sitting there, and finally came up behind him, put the lights on, and asked what's going on. The driver said, "Well, we wanted to go drop these children off, but they're refusing to put their seatbelts on, so we said we're not going anywhere until their seatbelts are on." And all you could hear was click, click, click. So I thought that was good. That was a good... good positive affirmation there. And it's something that is not always the easiest to try to enforce. They'll put it on, and then as soon as you start driving, you hear it being disconnected, or they'll try to make it look like it's in, or whatever. But if you're consistent in it, again, the blessing of being consistent, I mean, there's vans that the children get in and they get buckled. There's others where the driver and the crew is not consistent with making sure that seatbelts happen, and it's almost impossible to enforce. If I'm an alternate driver, it's very difficult. It's like, well, I want to make sure the seatbelts are on. But if that particular driver and his crew have not made it a priority to make sure that every child is seatbelted before the van leaves, it's impossible for me to try to enforce that. And so be consistent in that, and it does reward, you know, there is reward in that, because they do learn that you're not going to go anywhere until seatbelts are on, and maybe the police can help to enforce it. So another difficult one is no overloading of vehicles. But I think that one's important. We used to enjoy wow, we have 20 children in the van, you know, and this is great that we're overflowing. But that's not a good idea. Keep to the capacity of your vehicle, and honor the law of the land in that. And a good rule of thumb for that is whatever amount of seatbelts you have, that's the amount of children in the vehicle. There have been times where I have made exception for that, where we just had one extra, we weren't going far, and you know, put one of the teachers on the floor in the middle or something like that, somebody that's over 18 that is one of you, and you're just going a half mile or a mile down the road, and you just kind of deal with it. But generally, try to honor that and respect the law, because we want to be respected as an authority in their lives as well. We try to have a crew of three staff in the vans, including the driver, to just simply so that there's somebody in to assist in order and safety. The driver is not a disciplinarian. The driver is not there to maintain order. The driver needs to make sure that seatbelts are buckled before he leaves, but he's not the one that's going to make that happen. And so other staff members should be in the vehicle when possible to help with that. And generally for our vans, we recommend, and I don't know how much it actually happens that way, we don't monitor that, but is to have somebody at the door, on the side door, and then somebody in the back seat somewhere, just so that you're scattered. There's somebody at the door to jump at, in and out, to pick people up, and also that they're at the door in case there's trouble. We've had ones that have tried to open the door and jump out. And so it's just good to have somebody right there at the door. In Pennsylvania, I don't know if it's law or not. I think it is that if there's an airbag, at least it's recommended, if there's an airbag on the front seat, that it's somebody over 12 years old. And so, but generally the front seat is only for older children, even though it's a coveted seat. The driver and crew members must be alert to people around the vehicle, especially when backing up. If a child jumps on the outside of a vehicle, that vehicle must stop movement immediately. And all posted speed limits shall be observed. Drivers are encouraged to drive less than the speed limit at night and under poor road conditions. Drivers must use proper signals when turning or stopping. Be aware of crosswalks. Pedestrians in crosswalks have the right-of-way. Is that the same here in Canada? And then I think another important part is after each use, when you're done, you're locking up for the night, the driver should make a round in the vehicle and just make sure that there's nobody sleeping in the back seat or had crawled under a seat and nobody knew it was there and he's still under there. There have been incidents in the last year of buses that parked, dropped their children off, parked, and an hour or two later discovered that somebody was still on that bus. in Lancaster there. It happened twice in a few months' time. And, of course, that driver is in big trouble, because that is a requirement that they have, is that you do a quick pass through the bus before you park. And that's something that I think makes good sense. You think you've got everybody off, just do a quick round and jump over the seats, whatever, to make sure that everybody's out and nobody's sleeping in there. The other thing that we encourage is that all windows are closed and doors are locked when the vehicles are not in use. It just simply limits temptation for a child to run out and jump in the van and lock the doors and beep the horn and whatever else they may do. Just to try to have that where it limits that temptation. You know, sometimes I used to think, well, I mean, my vehicle, I don't have that much stuff in it. I don't care if people get in it. But it just simply makes it easier all around for law enforcement, for the ministry, whatever, if there isn't open vehicles for people to jump into. I know one time, was it you that found fireworks in your vehicle? And it was left unlocked and somebody needed a place to stash something. I don't know if they were illegal fireworks or why they needed a place to stash them, but they were found in the van. So locking is a good idea for the sake of everyone around us. We had a situation where we were coming home from church, and my wife and I and noticed a lot of police in the area, and we wondered what was going on, but okay, we'll go home. And just got in the door and noticed that across the yard that the police were in the house, or looking in the windows in the house next door, which we owned as a ministry, but it was empty at the time. And so I went over there and asked them if they need something, and they said, well, they had a break-in just a couple doors down, and there were three men, and they had a gun, and they ran, and somebody said they saw them coming in here and going into this house. And I said, well, it's locked. And they said, yeah, we already checked that out and discovered everything's all locked up. So it wasn't an issue because it was locked. I don't know if they had tried or not, but it just made their job easier because the house was locked, and it didn't give them a place to go out and hide out with a gun. Let's see if I got everything in the vans. One that I didn't touch on. The driver should always stay with the vehicle whenever possible. Rather than the driver jumping out and going to pick up or drop off, it should be somebody else, and the driver stay with the vehicle. If you have a situation where the driver is needed, make sure you turn the vehicle off and pull the keys, take them with you before you jump out, even though there might be another teacher in the van still that is watching over things. Pull the keys if you're getting out of the vehicle and turn the vehicle off. Any questions on the safety on the streets or in the vans? All right, we'll move on. Safety on the grounds, something that is difficult because the lots are small, is we try to encourage not to play on the parking lots. And again, it's difficult because there's not a lot of grass and there's a lot of children. And so often there's multiple vans for one route, for one class, and while the rest of the ones are coming for that route or for that class, some of them will be outside playing, and so it's not an easy one, and yet it's an issue of safety with vans and vehicles coming in and out. To play on the parking lots can be a safety hazard. Ball playing and throwing should be well away from the streets so that
a ball is not going out in the street that they're going to have to chase after. And the other thing that we have not mastered, we've talked about, we have never, or I shouldn't say never implemented a plan, we've done varying degrees of it, is staggered dismissal times. For us, we have probably, 15 or 16 different classes and in 7 different routes. And so to have only one route at a time that's going out, getting in the vans, getting loaded up, and leaving is a real advantage rather than 2 or 3 classes or routes coming and everybody converging outside and trying to figure out who's who and who's going where and all of that. It just eliminates confusion if you have a planned dismissal time. And again, it's one that we have done varying degrees of and currently don't really have anything in place. In the classroom, something that is very important in all of these aspects is that you are never alone by yourself with a child, especially for the male, that you're not taking a child by yourself into a room somewhere to talk to them, whatever, but that you always have somebody else with you, and or that you're doing it out, in the open somewhere. It can be in a corner, but where things, it's not behind a closed door. There was a school nearby in York County that had a teacher that was their policy, but the child still tried to say, he did this, he did that, and it took months until it was finally resolved, and the teacher was found to be clear of the charges. But of course, it's in the newspapers, and it just makes a big negative publicity that is difficult then to live back down again. So be careful with those things, that you're doing things by twos at least, or threes, and that you're not behind closed doors with a child by yourself. We live in a world that, unfortunately, we have to watch those things. And some of it's not so unfortunate, because it's good practice anyway, just to be totally above board. Something to consider is in the building is to make sure that you have an emergency evacuation plan in place. And we haven't drilled ours, but we have one in place. And it probably would be a good idea to drill it. I mean, in the public schools, they do it, on a monthly basis? I believe so. And so make sure that you have plans in place. I mean, Lord willing, there'll never be a need for it, and yet it's a good idea to have those things in place. Another thing to consider in the building is second-story windows. Whether it's in the summer, you have the windows open and it's hot, and just the possibility of things being thrown out onto the street below, or a child to hang out. And the possibility of injury. So watch those things. First aid, if there is a child that needs something, be very careful what you give. We have a policy that we do not give any kind of Tylenol or anything like that even to a child without knowing from the mother if that's okay. Just simply because of all kinds of possibilities, and even allergies. So make sure you know what you have these things prepared for and in place ahead of time. Special activities, it's a good idea to have a permission slips and even a medical release form. If you're going to be out for a few days, you have the children with you, have some kind of a form that the parents sign. And again, I had mentioned it earlier, but make sure that they have your phone number, that you have theirs, and that in case of emergency one way or the other, that you can be reached and they can be reached if you have their children with you for an extended period of time. Another thing that we encourage is, in a special activity,
like say a choir tour or something like that, where you're going for a week to different places and you have 20 children. But that's a bigger size. I think it's a good idea to do this even with a smaller size group, is to have a specific teacher assigned to a specific child or group of children, where that child knows, I am responsible to this teacher. And this teacher knows, I am responsible for these three children. And that's your focus. You always know where they're at. They always know where you're at. And you've got your eye on them. You're doing that. If you're going to break up for activities that you're a group together, if you're going to the zoo, you don't have to watch over 12 children. You've got your two or three children that you're responsible for, and that you can keep your eye on. It just keeps from somebody falling through the cracks, where everybody's trying to look out for everybody, and yet you don't know. You can't keep track of everybody, but you have your one or two or three at the most, and are able to keep track of those. Any questions on safety? I've gotten a number of questions on liability, and we do have liability insurance. We had it for already for the buildings, and just a general liability that you have to have if you're going to be renting a place or whatever. They require a certificate of insurance. But even outside of that, I'm not against having it. Just simply, it's there, and I think it's in today's world, it's a responsible thing to do, just to have it there in case of anything. Yeah, go ahead.
This thing of never having a child by yourself and doing things in twos or threes, what about the whole homosexuality thing, like to a male and a male leader, a male boy? Like, if you're doing in two and threes, do you make sure that the other one is of the opposite sex?
That's definitely the best, and that's why we often say three instead of just two, so that you can have not just a guy and a girl. If you're married, that's no big deal, but where you don't have just a guy and a girl together, but that you have, you know, another guy or girl with that, that there's two guys and a girl, or two girls and a guy, and working. That's what we encourage as much as possible. It's still enough of a stigma or whatever that that's not too big an issue. At least we haven't found it to be so. Anything else? Okay, other practical issues. Creatures. Yeah, go ahead. That's my next one. Yep. Other practical issues, and creatures is the... that is something that is an issue. And bed bugs hadn't been as much of an issue, is a more recent thing, again, that's coming back. It had been a big issue 30, 40 years ago, but is now coming back, and coming back fast. And we were made aware of it because of an infestation in Jeff's home, his dad, Jared's dad. And it was kind of like, well, what do you do? I mean, it's a bit embarrassing, you know, because it's like bed bugs. I mean, this is just not something you deal with. But it's actually becoming quite a problem again in the cities. And I have a number of newspaper articles that I've clipped out on the problem, and it's something that we're probably going to have to continue to be aware of. Lice, likewise, is a big issue. With lice, it used to be in the schools in Pennsylvania that you couldn't come to school if you had lice, and so during the school year we didn't have to worry too much about lice because the schools took care of it. It seems like they have loosened that a bit, and even outside of that, in the summertime, we had to watch it because the schools weren't there to enforce it. We just simply made it a policy, just like the schools, that you can't come to class with lice. We don't We don't want to be the place where somebody else's children are getting lice because of coming to church. But that's a difficult one because some parents just don't do much about it. Either they don't really care, or they don't want to go through the pain of having to deal with it. I mean, it's a process to get rid of lice. I don't know how many of you have dealt with it, but my sister just recently had them again, and I mean, it took a couple weeks till she was clear, and it takes a lot of work to go through and wash all the bedding every night or every morning, and all, you know, make sure that that the shampoo is kept after, and that it's just a lot of work. And then you go through the hair with and get all the little nits out, and so some of the parents just, for whatever reason, they don't deal with it. And we have one in particular that she almost always has lice for the last 3 or 4 years. Usually, they're pretty much under control. You know, if you check her hair, you find a nit here or there. But sometimes you look at her and she's just crawling. And so, you know, in those situations, you don't want to bring her to class. And yet, what do you do? Because mom's not going to deal with them. And so, in her situation, I mean, our teachers have actually taken her home and just gave her hair good shampooing and helped her at least to be able to get rid of the live ones so that she can come to class. So it is a real issue and one that you want to be careful with. And yet, you know, if you bring children home, you have that possibility, and you don't want to not bring them to your house because of the possibility of getting lice. And so it's just something that you have to be aware of, be prepared for, and do what you can. But then there are times where you still have to deal with it. And the same way with bed bugs, where if you put the item in the freezer and freeze them for 2 hours, I think it is, that kills them. Or high heat kills them as well. So throw the clothes in the dryer for 30 minutes. And if there's any hiding in the clothes, well, that kills them. But what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to, when somebody comes to your home, you're going to throw their backpack in the dryer and make sure that there's nothing there? So there's only so much that you can do. But be aware of it and know that those things are out there. Do what you can, and then suffer the consequences of... and know that that's just simply a part of ministry that we have to be aware of, and a part of the cost that we have to count. I guess when the more difficult aspects of that is young people whose families are not involved. You know, it's the young person who's excited about ministry and they bring somebody home and they bring bed bugs to the home. You know, and that can be a real discouragement for parents that may then say, well, you know, let's not bring children to our home anymore. You know, and so we don't want to get to that point. Those of us who have, you know, our home is, I mean, we're involved in the ministry as a family. We count that cost and we deal with it accordingly. But if your family isn't involved, maybe there's some extra carefulness that needs to happen. Roaches is thankfully not one that is quite as easy to spread because they're big and they don't hide in your clothing generally, but they do. I mean, be aware of that. If you help somebody move or whatever, that their furniture, their clothing, bags of clothing may have some in. And my sister had gotten some in her car that she just had a hard time getting rid of in her car. And because of helping somebody move, I think Jeff had gotten some help somebody move, and the people had a dresser that they didn't need, and gave it to him, and he took it home, and it had roaches in them. So those are things that that you need to be aware of and watch out for. But again, deal with it as it comes. Personal items have a way of disappearing. Even with the best of your young people, it seems, sometimes you, We had a situation where a camera was taken, or a cell phone was taken at a wedding. And of course, we had some of our young people there, and so it was like, okay, I think it's one of your young people, you know. And it very likely was, even though it was like, well, I don't know which one of our young people would do such a thing. Because you think they're pretty good, you know. I mean, yeah, they're naughty, but they wouldn't do such a thing. But they do. And the thought actually in the mindset is, if it's there, it's free for the taking. I mean, if you want it, then you should be keeping it a little bit more secure. So do them a favor and don't just let things like that set out that for them to easily grab. Secure your classrooms and building before leaving. Doors, windows closed and locked. And that's more for the city. We try to make that a policy. Obviously in the city, that's a necessity, just simply even for the copper pipes and all of that, if your building isn't secure. And then I already mentioned to keep vehicles locked at all times. Any questions on these practical aspects? Any other practical issues that you might have questions on? Yeah. Can they come? Our policy is that they can't come if they have lice. Yes, that has been our policy. We have backed down on it a little bit for situations like the one where she always has it, where it's like, okay, let's make sure there's nothing live, or you know that it's not going to be an issue where you're spreading it to the other children. But any mom who cares is not going to appreciate if her children are getting lice from coming to church, and that could very well be what's going to keep them from coming if they know that that's not being enforced. So we don't want to keep other children from coming just simply because of the possibility of getting lice. But it's a difficult one, and especially if the schools aren't going to enforce it anymore, it becomes even more difficult. You mean? Oh, yeah. Yeah, the parents have appreciated efforts. I mean, it's like, okay, sure, if you want to do something, go for it. You know, they do generally appreciate it. They know it's there. And so if you're going to help them out, and they generally do appreciate it. But, yeah, it's not an easy one to deal with just simply because, for one, it's kind of an embarrassment, you know, and so you don't want to make them feel dirty. You don't want to make them feel inferior or anything like that. And yet, you don't want it to be an issue of other children not being able to come. Yes?
I think you mentioned something about cell phones, iPods, maybe one of the other sessions. I just wondered, do you have any policy, like when they come into class, do you take them from them, or do you have problems with them playing on them? Or
Do you want to answer that one, Jerry? So I'm not in a regular classroom, so.
Yes, some of the classes actually have it on their rules on their poster that they cannot even bring the electronics into the classroom, and if they do, the teachers will take them. In our class, we don't have that policy. If they bring it, that has to stay in their pockets. They know that's the rule. If it comes out of their pockets, then we do take them till we bring them back home. But it is a huge distraction, especially when 8, 9, 10-year-olds are all coming to class with cell phones now, and their rap song ringers are going off during the lesson. It does create quite a distraction.
Any more questions, just in general? It doesn't have to be anything we covered this afternoon. We have 15 minutes or 45 minutes. 15. Any more questions? Yeah.
I was wondering if you have is the standing agreement that you'll show up at the same home every week, or do you confirm that with them each week? What is your communication with the parents?
On whether they're going to be coming to church or not? Yeah, it's pretty much just an agreed. I mean, they're coming, and we show up at their house, and if it doesn't work for them to come that night, then it's fine. Some teachers have made it, made pickup go easier by calling ahead of time and seeing, you know, are they going to come tonight? But generally, it's an expected thing where you just go
and pick up on the normal route. They know what time you're coming. And sometimes it's like, oh, it's Tuesday, you know. But for the most part, they're excited about it and are ready and will, you know, with the communication today, they often let you know if they're not going to be coming even ahead of time without you having to make that phone call. So, we generally have it just the expected thing and then show up at their house. If they're not coming, then that's fine. Over here.
I had a question on the discipline. When you talked about where you know that a parent would beat them up or something if you bring them home early, is it possible to communicate with the parents to say that it's taken care of? I think some of them feel almost pressured to please us that they rat out their children because they're supporting us.
Yeah, and that's true. I think you're right. Where they feel like, well, okay, in order to let them know that I'm serious about this, I'm going to beat my child up. And I think communication is important. Just to that they know where you're at, you know where they're at, and if you can communicate with them and say, hey, sometimes if we do have a problem, I know that's not an easy thing to up and talk about, you know, hey, you're beating your child. But the more communication there can be, the better it is. A lot of problems in life would be solved if we would communicate. I should have mentioned earlier, I actually brought a few Creation to Christ books along. I had gotten a few sets a few years ago and had gotten them in bulk to save on, to get a better price on them. And I still have some sets. I have the laminated picture sets. I have the children's sets and a few workbooks that with the worksheets and things. If anybody wants them, I have them available for a lot better price than what you can get them for at New Tribes. I brought, I think, two sets of each. The other thing I brought along I had extra of was a Hudson Taylor set, a two-volume biography hardcover set that was recommended at our missions conference and has been a recommended book that we have had as a mission at charity for a number of years already. I have one set that I brought along if anybody wants it. I don't know if I'll set them out here for the afternoon, and if you want to talk to me, I have them available. Anything else? Okay, I'll turn it over to you.